Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always so excited and looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in a field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success.
In this episode, Effective Principle-Based Learning, we will explore with Mr. Alexander Salas, Learning, Training, and Performance Support. Alexander Salas is an award-winning e-learning designer, learning facilitator, and instructional designer. He's the owner of StyleLearn, a consulting firm, and also its chief awesomeness officer at elearninglaunch.com. After serving in the U.S. Navy as a hospital corpsman attached to the Marine Corps and attaining advanced degrees in education and leadership studies, Alex has become an award-winning instructional designer, storyline expert, and CPLP with a passion for e-learning for the last 12 years. Alex created StyleLearn LLC to specialize in the integration of e-learning design with popular authoring tools, custom web design, game design, and virtual and augmented realities for workplace learning. Alex is a regular speaker, author, and contributor at major ATD e-learning guild and training magazine conferences, and contributes to publications, and is an active participant in his local L&D community as the president of ATD-CFL. Alex was a designer of learning programs for Fortune 100 companies such as Centene Corporation, Philips, and Dell Technologies. Alex is a regular speaker and contributor at major ATD learning events, podcasts, conferences, and publications. Jack, so excited to have Alex on today.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is going to be a fun conversation. So in this episode, we will explore the process, principles, and challenges of effective learning and development. We will discuss with Alex how to identify learning and development growth opportunities, what research-based solutions look like, and some specific principles of effective learning. Additionally, we will explore why ERP, organizational change practitioners, should even care about learning and development-based principles. We will also examine the 10 worst practices that everyone should know, and more. Alex, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity of being here, and it's a pleasure to be part of the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. We're looking forward to picking your brain here a little bit.
Absolutely. Really looking forward to an insightful conversation with you, Alex.
So before we start with the interview, Alex and Jonathan, I just wanted to share some thoughts around the value of L&D, learning and development, in the context of ERP organizational change. Alex, you stated, I believe this was on your website actually, that quote, corporate learning has the ultimate responsibility to facilitate the conditions and resources for thriving performance, end quote. I love that quote. While learning and development has a significant place in ERP organizational change, not all ERP organizational change learning and training programs are created equal. In fact, there's an article, Scott and Vesey, 2018, I believe it was, had an article called Implementing Enterprise Resource Planning Systems, The Role of Learning from Failure. And in that article, they stated, quote, in this paper, we focus on how organizational learning relates to success and failure of ERP implementations. Organizational learning is often associated with organizational improvement and development, and thus implicitly and indirectly with success, end quote. So organizational learning is not just an idea that needs to be advocated through organizational culture. Organizational learning also means that individual stakeholders benefit from appropriate and efficient learning that is then effectively transferred to the workplace. So effective organizational learning also implies a learning approach that is based on evidence-based learning theories and principles. And as Clark and Este stated in their book, the book is entitled Turning Research into Results, A Guide to Selecting the Right Performance Solutions, is that organizations benefit from, quote, adopting the results of solid performance research and turn it into practical and cost-beneficial performance results for your organization, end quote. In fact, they also said in their book, quote, research evidence dramatically increases the chance that a performance improvement program will succeed, end quote. So organizational learning and the value placed on learning can be clearly observed by reviewing the organizational change game plans or the ERP organizational change project plans. And additionally, effective training implies and includes effective evaluation. In fact, evidence-based concepts, principles, and techniques are important to notice and to pay attention to because, as mentioned in Kirkpatrick's four levels of training evaluation, humans tend to learn best in certain ways. Ellen Bike, I hope I'm pronouncing her last name correctly, mentioned in Kirkpatrick's four levels of training evaluation that, quote, they truly understand that evaluation is not just about analytics and metrics. It is more about the human spirit behind the measures and the need for a consistent human interface along the way. And in my opinion, this is precisely why learning and development, or L&D, and human performance technology, or also known as HPT, principles grounded in research are powerful and effective. So promoting the way that humans learn, effective measurement results in improved organizational learning, which promotes ERP organizational change success. So that being said, Alex, while your focus is e-learning, I know that your practice is also based heavily on research-based learning. And so today we'd like to pick your brain regarding these principles of effective learning. So my first question is, one of the services you provide is to consult business stakeholders in identifying learning and development growth opportunities. How do you do that exactly? And how do you identify learning and development growth opportunities exactly within an organization?
Sure. So developing that type of analysis comes from a very particular era in time. So interesting enough, in our field, we seem to have some kind of gap where we did a lot of great things in the 70s, and then things kind of got nebulous, and a lot of the substance was lost in terms of discussions or what can be seen in conferences or on LinkedIn, which is a it seems to be a primary hub of conversations for L&D. But primarily, you have to have a systemic approach on what you do. Mm-hmm. And ERP practitioners, you know that, because obviously when you're implementing something like that, it's a systemic approach. It affects the whole organization, all the dependent connections, and every single stakeholder in the organization. So the approach is usually one of discovery, and you can be informed by base of theorems or theoretic frameworks that kind of help you set your practice in a certain way. But in result of what the experience is like, it's truly a process of discovery. It's a process of conversation, and it's a process of using advanced communication skills to really ascertain a few things. So one is ascertain if the people that I'm talking to are working with others in the organization, or it's just a group of folks that are making decisions without any input down the line. And then the other part is, if we have the connection and the resource, then to really understand if the solution needs to be a systems change, a performance and system change, or it needs to be coupled with learning interventions and training opportunities.
So Alex, when I listen to that, what's coming up for me is that there's a conversation of discovery of who am I talking with, who are the stakeholders at play, and what is the need? Is it a systems change, or is it a coupled with learning? If I'm understanding you correctly, I just want to confirm that I am here.
Yes, correct. You know, in organizations, you have employees, right? And they get the work done. And there are systems in which they operate. And there are ways in which they communicate. And
yep.
So regardless of how you are trying to implement any type of ERP solution, you have to have a clear and documented perspective on how that works. Because then you can see where the improvements need to happen in terms of, it could be just a situation of a systems approach, or it could be just a situation of enabling certain things on the job site, on the environment in which folks are doing their work. So, you know, you mentioned HPT in the beginning, human performance technology, that seems to be very basic to that. And the field that truly addresses all of this is industrial organizational psychology.
Hmm. And I think, just to add, Alex, I think if I had to distill down some of your response there, you mentioned earlier in the response to the question, this idea of being a holistic approach, right? So it's really not just training, it's training through measurement and through application. So training your workforce in a way that's aligned with a very specific objective or organizational mission. And so to be able to measure success and the response of the training and how effective that training is really important. And then being able to make sure that new knowledge is adequately transferred to the floor, you know, or to the operations is key.
Yes. And so that brings a very important conversation based on what we have today. I think in many respects, the most elite learning development organizations or teams are creating partnerships within the organization and taking advantage of the resources available because of those partnerships. So we live in a different world today where all this evaluation and tracking can actually be done through web analytics and digitally rather than, you know, what we have in the classic model of the Kirkpatrick's levels, which, you know, nobody does observation because observation requires that you either take time from a supervisor to observe workers doing something, or you are actually walking out there and seeing, you know, witnessing the work being done. So there's a need for modifications in some classic models, such as instructional systems development, right, which relied upon that type of evaluation and observations, and you have to adapt with and maximize the technologies you have today.
Yeah, great point.
So let's jump into that. Right, because there's clearly a difference here if no one's doing observation. So Alice, can you walk us through, even at a high level, what a typical solution or engagement would look like for you in addressing these L&D principles in organizations? It sounds like you're shifting the focus from L&D and just learning design to how do you improve the organization itself? Whether I think you mentioned industrial performance psychology as that basis. So when you're talking to people in organizations about how you can do that and offer greater value, what does that conversation look like?
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation. So, you know, part of the research when we look at things is, you know, this all started with me looking into the origin of ADDIE and why, you know, everybody talks about ADDIE as, a, you know, that framework for instructional design. Some people call it a model. There are a few papers out there that identified that, you know, no one was really claiming this model. And then some other people saying that it was some kind of colloquial thing. So I dug into it and really found out that what this is in the 70s, which is part of what I was mentioning before, instructional design really departed from being school-based academic curriculum type thing going into a systemic approach. And right. Of course, there was literature before that by Silverne, systemic approach to training. So ideally, what we're thinking of is that we can't think of the two things being separate. We can't think of training and performance support being separate. We have to think of them as being one thing. The question is, which one should be predominant depending on the case? And so ideally, if you really want to help the organization, the first thing that you should take care of, or you should, if you think of zones, right? So if we go a little Vygotsky here and we think about zone of proximal development, and we think of some zones that we can draw, there is the outer perimeter of our defense is performance support. And the central piece of that should be the training and learning intervention. So if you don't have that outer perimeter, then you're trying to solve processes and failures, let's say failures and processes that are work-related, they're operational, training approaches, and that we know already that doesn't work.
Great insight, Alex. Great illustration. So I want to ask you, you mentioned on your website that, quote, projects and experience over topics and courses all day, end quote. Why do you say that? What do you mean by that?
So a year ago, a little bit over a year ago now, a year and a month, I started my consultancy full time. I've been doing e-learning consulting for about 6 years. And 3 weeks later, I had the great idea. Well, I had a lot of encounters with on LinkedIn of folks that are graduating with master's degrees, but cannot do anything, can't get a job, can't really perform anything. They are able to write a bunch of papers about theory, but they're not able to execute or illustrate or, you know, provide any type of tangible evidence of their work or their knowledge and their theories and applications. So it became a little bit overwhelming, and that's when I decided to say, okay, well, how can we help people in a mass level, like in mass production level? How can we help the most people as possible that are in this situation? They want to work in learning and development and want to do this. So the answer was eLearn Launch, which is an academy. It's an online academy in which I work. I started by myself with a buddy of mine, Aaron King, and then he left, but I started with the notion of saying, okay, I'm going to teach people what I do and what I learned through my 12 to 15 years of experience already in the field. And to my realization and my reflection, 80% of what pays my bills came from self-directed learning, not from degrees. So that was that. And so when I say, when you have that phrase there, which says, you know, over topics and courses all day, is because when you look at addressing organizational performance, you can't solve organizational performance with academic models. And many L&D teams have this problem, right? They make courses for everything. Let's make a course. Hey, you have a problem here? Let's make a course. And so that's an academic approach. Courses are great if you want to take an exam and a quiz, you want to pass a quiz. The question for people to go to work when you want them to perform, are you paying them to be good quiz takers, or are you paying them to get your business on?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Alex. You know, I know from knowing you and your work that your approach is based heavily in different theories and principles, right? In evidence-based research, Right. And I think what you're saying is, and it's really a principle of Nestle & Associates, you know, we're heavily based on, you know, applied research, right? I mean, there's obviously a place for academics and research and study and evidence-based knowledge. But then to get the performance you want, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, you got to get out and boots on the ground, roll up your sleeves and get the experience and get the projects done on the floor in the facilities. That's where it matters. It's kind of like your approach, which is exactly why we're excited to have you on the floor, is that it's kind of an art or almost a craft and being able to apply principle to performance on the floor, basically. So although, you know, as you mentioned, understanding topics and taking courses is really important, but really this goes back to the previous question, that's really learning, you know, that's training, that's gaining some of the fundamental knowledge, but then you really got to, number one, make sure it sticks, you know, that learning sticks, and make sure it transfers to the organization. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alex, I really love that answer. And what's coming up for me is the challenge in translating that principle into organizations. Because what I often see is that you've got practitioners on learning and development that have a view that learning and development and creating courses is their job. And on the same side, you've got executives that view learning and development's role as support function, rather than relating core to solving business problems. You've got, in some organizations, this mindset on both sides that almost precludes the other from being jointly part of the solution. One of the things I want to bring up with this is that quote that Jack mentioned earlier. And I'm going to just repeat it for our listeners to set up this question. But corporate learning has the ultimate responsibility to facilitate the conditions and resources for thriving performance. A corporate learning function that solely focuses on reducing learning experience to courses and topic libraries is just an academic environment in disguise. Therefore, learning and development in corporate settings has to not only address the needs of the learner, but also address the needs of the business. Such an insightful quote from my perspective. Alex, how do you talk about this with both executives and with learning and development teams and organizations?
Yes. So I will say that the biggest challenge will be talking to L&D teams about it, because I think executives get it. It's an interesting state of ambivalence if you think about it, because many of the L&D folks were business people that became the L&D folks. And that still happens today. Nothing wrong with that. But ideally, what we want is that person that goes into that role to then develop and really go into the research and develop a good acumen as to the differences between academic support and what being academic support, academic environment, and actual organizational performance environment support. So ideally, in that quote, what we're saying is you need to take care of the things that will help someone do their job first. And that's the whole performance support perimeter that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a course. Those are materials. Those are job aids. Those are web pages. Those are, tools, QR codes, things that are right there that people need to use and get used to as they're doing their work. The second part of that, then, if we talk to executives will have the mindset of saying, okay, yeah, it's training. Let's do more training, right? Let's do more training. And so that's the problem. If you have someone that comes from the business, goes into L&D, and doesn't change their mindset, they will also proliferate the same notion, right? Hey, people are not doing their job. I found someone not doing their job right on the floor. We need more training.
Yeah.
And that, well, you know, nothing wrong with that in the sense that you will do that and you will sort of take care, you know, you have the right intentions, but the problem is you have the wrong approach. The best intentions in the world are not going to fix that problem.
Alex, what's the mindset? You referenced it briefly, but I want to make this overt for our listeners. What is the mindset that you're looking for that enables this change, both on the system level and the behavior of L&D and executives? Can you call that out overtly?
Yes, I think I can, and I'll give my best shot here. So one of the things I found out is the following, and it's interesting because I found this through helping people that are coming through the academy, because the people that I'm helping are people that come, you know, they're people. So they're coming with the same mental model that everybody else is, right? We go through 20 years of schooling, right? We go to school and, you know, we go to school and we just do what we need to do. We go to school, we do the assignments, we get our grade, we go to the next course or the next grade or something like that. Great. Well, that mental model kind of kicks in. And so the mindset shift that needs to happen is one that refutes that, one that, you know, rejects that approach immediately of, oh, we have a performance issue. Let's go ahead and make a course, and you're going to take a quiz, and guess what? Once you take that quiz, it's all in our LMS, and whenever you need some help, you're going to have some issues because you're not going to find the information you need because it's in our LMS. But ideally, that's what you need to focus on is what are the tools, the conditions, the best way you can enable the environment. You can help the supervisor, the manager, or other teams make their lives easier because you are observing these things and making changes in the environment. That is golden because the reason why L&D has the advantage to do that is because the people that are doing the job, they're too busy to pay attention.
So important.
So, Alex, you mentioned in another blog, and I also want to share this quote with our listeners and then get your response. But you said, quote, his book review is on evidence-informed learning design, creating training to improve performance by Nealon and Kirshner, 2020. And according to the authors, its purpose is to help learning professionals at any stage in their careers to focus on the right things so that they can build a strong knowledge foundation based on scientific evidence. And then you'd mentioned that, of course, the mention of the right things intrigued me, so I took a shot at reading and reviewing this book. Why exactly does it matter, Alex? I mean, why are you so adamant about practice-based and evidence-based research? And why should ERP organizational change practitioners care? Why do you think this idea of the author said scientific evidence, why is that so intriguing to you?
It's helpful. I mean, I think the term evidence-informed is very important. We have to understand a few things, right? And this drives exactly to this question, which is no one knows what works in your organization.
Yeah.
No one has, you know, the organization you work for is not like any other. Even if they're in the same industry, they make the same type of products, they're two different entities. So you can't go and read four papers that you like and think, okay, I'm going to do that here because that is going to work because I read this paper or I read this book. One of the things I said about that book is in particular is that it seemed to ignore other approaches and other things. Systems approach to training is not mentioned there at all. So it does put a highlight on task analysis and that type of thing. But the main core is that you have to have a systemic approach. Look at the task, look at the people, look at the environment, have a clear understanding of that. And that permeates to anything else you want to do. Any ERP implementation, any software you're bringing into the company, anything that you want your organization, your people, to adapt their behavior to, right?
And yeah.
That's the key component there. So research is great. Yes, look at research. But the problem is you don't have anyone that has done research specifically in your organization.
Yeah.
And so you have to develop, you have to be informed, but you have to develop and document that so you can work from that.
So I think, you know, that's a great point. Essentially, experience and practice that works in one organizational context may not work in another organizational context. And I think that if you view that organization, like you said, holistically, and you apply principles and evidence-based principles that are essentially proven across contexts, that you're much more likely to be successful, right? So, but you're absolutely right. I mean, typically in most organizations, when they go through a learning curve or they put a learning program together, it can be very different, can take on so many different forms. But if that program is based in principles that have been proven over and over and over and they're context independent, you're much more likely to succeed. Is that a fair idea?
Yeah. That's good. That's a good way to think about it.
Alex, what I'm really, curious about, and I want to make sure I'm capturing this correctly for our listeners, is even with great principles, that there still is a need to be observant and recognize that the behavior you're trying to change in your company, whether that's a culture, a system, a mindset, or an actual behavior, needs to fit the solution of that system. And so those models are useful, but they don't replace the need for observation of what's really occurring. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, correct. That's part, you know, observation will be part of your analysis approach. So absolutely. Yes. Or as an example, if you are trying to, for the lack of a better example, which is, you know, even when you're developing a course, let's say, right? Or if you're developing or you're analyzing, when you're in the analysis stage of doing anything, you need to be able to capture the environment and what are they doing, why they do the things they do, who are the best performers, who are not the so great, what's the difference, what's the delta between those two? And that enables a way for you to be able to do a gap analysis. What is it the organization wants and what is it that the people are doing and what's the big distance between those two things? How do we close that distance?
Makes sense. So important. And I wanted to just make sure we captured that for our listeners. And now, Alex and our listeners, we have a little bit of a treat for you. We're trying a new question style here. So this will be one where Jack and I are overtly together on this question. And I want to set this up by talking about something I saw on one of your blogs. And I really love this, the intention behind this one. So I'm going to read it for our listeners. Best practices have a common popularity among business people. This is a great way to insight and identify quality work. It's easy to see how learning and development may have trouble identifying what those best practices consist of. Therefore, in good style learned fashion, here are some of the great worst practices with the hope of enabling anyone, learning professionals or not, to recognize poorly designed training strategies. So Alex, what I see you doing here overtly is inverting the question and flipping it upside down. And I had a huge smile on my face when I read that. So I'm going to hand it over to Jack. But one of the things I want to think about here is, why did you approach this question this way? And what value does it give? Jack?
Yeah, so that being said, Alex, Jonathan and I wanted to read the complete list for our listeners. And then we'd like to pick your brain. And if you could pick two in which to elaborate further for our listeners, we'd appreciate it. So I'll read the list here in just a second, but maybe if you had to pick the top two worst practices and elaborate on those two, that would be great. So for the rest, we recommend that our listeners read the entire article and we'll include the links in our show notes. So here are Alex's worst practices, top 10. Number one, don't analyze business needs. Number two, avoid learning objectives. Number three, design training for people to understand. Number four, use training as information delivery. Number five, based everything in learning styles. Number six, use training as performance correction. Number seven, ask for training acknowledgments. Eight, have SMEs develop training. Nine, rush training development. Or 10, make instructor-led training your primary method. So Alex, if you could just pick two and elaborate on those two and explain to our listeners why they are considered worst practices.
Okay, sure. So I will say that for the better bang for the buck of our listeners here, I think I already stressed enough how important it is to do needs analysis. So consider number one to be one of the most important things, but I'm going to cover the other two and go into detail because I believe I already explained a lot about the analysis piece. Number two is avoid learning objectives. And so there's this notion out there that, you know, people, they haven't really practiced the crafting of learning objectives, consider it to be sort of some kind of chore they have to do with, they just put a slide and they just put some bullet points and that's it. And there you go. And I did my learning objectives. And the whole point about learning objectives is an alignment process, right? So once you do your business analysis, you are going to identify the specific tasks, the job tasks that are involved. You need to align those tasks in a learning context. That's the purpose of learning objectives. So you're going to align to that, and ideally you're going to address the performance of those tasks. So if you don't do that, then what the problem you will have is sort of like they say about Addy, right? The first two are the most important. the analysis and the design. Everything else depends on that. So if you don't do learning objectives properly with a performance mindset on it, you are going to just have a conversation with SMEs, throw a bunch of content together, and then it's going to affect how you develop your assessment or evaluation tactics, because you don't have anything to go against. You don't have any type of goals to go against. So idea, most likely what people are going to be doing is pulling trivia questions out of a content, and that doesn't address the actual problems. So that's number two. And if we go then for, where should I go here? I think one of the main things will be number six, which is use training as performance correction. We talked a little bit about that, but ideally what it is you want to address performance issues with performance solutions. Performance solutions are changes to the environment, adjustments to systems, processes, and plain information. Not everything that is information needs to be thrown in a course. If you think about it in terms of time savings, money savings for the organization, this makes complete sense. If there is a new process that people need to follow and they are experts in the job, it's just a new process they need to perform, training doesn't necessarily need to be the answer for that. If people already have experience and they know the context of what the new process is going to be, they just need great guidance into that process, because all they need to do is follow the new steps, not learn anything new. So those are those will be important ones to think about. But I mean, really, yeah, all of those really reflect two things. Those 10 worst practices reflect two things: a lack of respect for the adult learner, and a preference for your delivery method, meaning that if you love doing in-classroom training, then that's what you're going to do, regardless of whatever the need calls for. The same with any other modality. I'm not really partial to anything. Yes, I make my money with e-learning, but I'll tell you exactly where e-learning doesn't work or may work.
Great insight, Alex. Thank you. Great points. And again, listeners, we'll have a link to Alex's blog into that article specifically in the show notes. So thanks, Alex. Great insight.
Thank you.
Yeah, great answer. Alex, I want to go further on here and mention something you also spoke about, which is the three dimensions of effective learning. And for our listeners, dimension one is training, dimension two is performance support, and dimension three is professional development. Alex, at a high level, can you explain further why you've labeled those three dimensions and why you've called them dimensions? What's the value of listing those out in that way?
Well, I think at times much of the conversations that happen are kind of, I always tend to have a little bit of a conflict if I'm having some kind of discussion on LinkedIn or anywhere else about how things should be done in L&D. And it seems to me that there is a mix of this levels or dimensions, if you think of it. And I think they are separate, but they are one. I mentioned in this interview that performance support and training are one thing, but one is going to be predominant depending on the needs of the organization. So there are different things that we need to address, right? So, training, first of all, we need to deal with the fact that we need to deal with training. Training is the opportunity to practice relevant tasks that you can actually perform in the job. Mm-hmm. And that contributes to the outcome, which is learning. We have all this notion that I think some of it comes from Europe, where we're calling training learning, or we don't call it training because somehow training is something below learning or something like that. And that's just, that's just marketing fluff. I don't think it helps the field to do something like that. They have to recognize the importance of training. And then also recognize the division between training and performance support in terms of what outcomes they provide. So we already discussed performance support, and that's one of the most important things.
Yeah.
The last thing is professional development, and I think we're mixing those two, because professional development, the way I look at it, professional development should be something that happens in collaboration with the professional, and is meant either from two angles, right? What the organization wants out of the professional, or what the professional wants for him or herself.
So, Alex, in ERP organizational change, we're talking about adult learners, right? And often with hours and hours of scheduled training, And you'd mentioned that, quote, are you aware of the cognitive load your training materials place on your adult learners? Cognitive load theory, or CLT, has been around for at least 25 years, but after reading this, you may reconsider the structure of your training curriculum, end quote. And again, I'll put that link in the podcast show notes. But it seems to me like this is a pretty important idea. Can you explain further to our listeners what you're referring to with this quote?
Sure. I mean, you know, if you want to read the details and geek out, look up Mr. Sweller for the theory of cognitive load. But it's a psychological concept that just basically, I can explain in layman terms, I say in easy terms, which is, look, it's TMI theory is what I call it, right?
So yeah, that's good. Yeah, right?
That's what I call it. It's like, it's TMI theory. So
I really like that.
Yeah, how does too much information happen? Well, TMI happens either all at once, or TMI happens due to the extent of it, right? So you can drill me for like 8 hours with too much information, or you can give me something that I'm not ready for. And readiness is one of those big components of adult learning, right? So you have to kind of assimilate that. If I'm going to start learning how to do video, you're not going to start me up with visual effects, right? That's a little bit too deep. And so that's basically what this cognitive load theory is hinting at, is addressing. There are different types out there, but the main point in terms of practice is knowing when you need to give people what they need and then scaffold from there, not, you know, as me, but you might have experts tend to want to give you the kitchen sink in one sweep.
Yeah. And Alex, I think that what you just said and how you responded is a pretty powerful statement. And I think it's often underestimated, frankly, in the field of ERP, organizational change. You know, there's many principles that have spawned from this idea of cognitive load theory, or CLT, but they apply directly to ERP organizational learning and training. And often in ERP organizational change, projects are months long and the training can be months long. And the schedule for training can be months long, which means you have a lot of adult learners going through training process where ideas like this are extremely valuable. So I highly recommend to our listeners to check it out and to take a look at your article, because I think this idea has a significant place in ERP organizational change. So thanks for that.
Yeah, my pleasure. And it's one of those things that in ERP is so important, right? Because we're always trying to find that sweet spot for training. Like, okay, when are we going live? And when should we train people? Wait a minute, it's too early.
Yeah.
It's too late. You know.
Well, I've seen ERP organizational change plans where they have adult learners in a room for 4 hours at a time, multiple times a week, number one. And I think, you know, there's, I won't get into it here, but there's ways to do things and ways not to do things with effective learning. And you also mentioned scaffolding, and that idea alone in training and learning through scaffolding is really important. But yet that's something you don't see a lot in ERP organizational change plans. So pretty powerful.
Alex, sitting here with this conversation, and we mentioned earlier about learning objectives, and we just talked about the importance of linking practice and learning and not overloading people. So can we dive into how we would actually do that? How do you take learning objectives, that defined learning objectives, link that in a way that's not overloading for the adult learner and deeply respectful for their experience and is linked to business outcomes?
Absolutely. So primarily, you know, it's an interesting conversation, because the best example of this was Bob Magger, who sadly passed away last year. And the interesting conversation about this is that Bob Magger was the one that identified behavioral-based learning objectives back in 1962. So there's even a paper out there that I still use it. One of his first books or papers that discuss behavioral-based objectives. And the whole point of it is to set objectives that align to expected behavior. So you can then, they are observable and can be measurable. So if we go to that situation, if we align this to the mention that we had before in the beginning, which is Kirkpatrick's, and I usually recommend to people that, you know, depending on the depth of what you're doing, you can go Kirkpatrick's or you can go Phillips ROI, which is Kirkpatrick's with an ROI element at the end, right? You will then have that alignment you're looking for, because you need to observe a behavior. So the main thing that Bob Magger laid out for us was something that I don't really see too much in many of the courses or things that people develop today, and that is the terminal learning objective and then the enabling learning objective. So a terminal learning objective is an ultimate statement that needs to be communicated to the learner as to what is it they need to do. What is it exactly they need to do, how they need to do it, and how well they need to do it.
Alex, something's not clear for me here. That terminal learning objective with Mr. Magger, that's a behavior, correct? I want to highlight that for our listeners. That's not just understanding something. That's actually a demonstrated physical action, correct? This is so important to understand.
Yes, this terminal learning objective is actually a statement that communicates to the learner what are the expectations, the conditions by which they're going to achieve what they need to achieve. So if we're going to make an example of this, it will be something like, given the course materials, the resources, the web links, the videos that you will watch, and the practice exercises, you will be expected to achieve a level of competency of XX, you know, 90%, whatever percent, whatever it is, in a particular task or end goal, right? And so then you have enabling objectives, and those enabling objectives build up, they're based on the job tasks, and they build up to that ultimate statement. But if you notice and if you pay attention to many of the courses, even in academia, when you pay attention to the courses out there, they are their syllabi and everything else, you only see enabling objective. There's no ultimate statement. There's no statement up front declaring, hey, Jack, hey, John, this is what you are expected to achieve at the end of this period.
Mm-hmm.
It's not communicated. And if you don't communicate that, then it's just the same as if you're trying to have someone perform a job really well and you fail to communicate that.
So true. Great insight. Well said, Alex. And I just want to remind our listeners, so I think I mentioned Kirkpatrick throughout this interview, and Alex just did as well. We did have Dr. Kirkpatrick on a previous episode, so I encourage our listeners to check that one out. And the Kirkpatrick model that Alex was referring to is, from a high level, it's referring to a model that has four levels of learning and evaluation, and those levels are reaction, learning, behavior, and results. So I encourage our listeners to take a listen to the episode with Dr. Kirkpatrick, as he does a great job explaining the model. So last question, Alex, and that is, if you had to distill down your years of work and research and experience into four or five sentences, what advice would you give and what advice would you like to leave for our listeners?
The advice that I have to leave is, do a good self-check against yourself and your practices. Take a step back, look at your practices, and see what is it that you are doing that is helping the organization and also then is helping the workers and the learners in context. One of the key things is that there's a notion out there that keeps spreading out that simplifies everything and takes a lot of substance out of what you would do. And this is not an easy thing to do. Like, good instructional design, not an easy thing to do, but it's really powerful and it's really valuable. And so the same with performance support. So if you really want to be a partner in the organization, take the time to learn the business of the organization, learn the language and the culture of the organization, and don't just sit in your bubble of learning and development, making courses, because you're not really helping. I mean, you like to tell yourself that you're helping the organization, but really what you might be doing, what I call people, is doing designer ego, which is helping yourself.
Yeah. Wow. Great insight. Well said. Alex, what a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for your time today. And thanks again for joining us and sharing your expertise. We really appreciate it.
Great conversation, Alex.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Jack and Jonathan, for having me here. It's been really a great experience.
Likewise.
Yeah, look forward to see more of your episodes and hear more about it.
Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Please join us in our next episode, Organizational Transformation, Keys to Success, with Mr. Joe Chorapora, as we explore successful organizational growth and transformation. Joe is a partner at Incline Equity Partners. Incline Equity Partners, headquartered in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is a private equity firm investing in manufacturing, distribution, and business service companies. Joe is currently serving as a director for multiple portfolio companies and is an expert in opportunity evaluation and developing growth strategies. Joe is responsible for evaluating, analyzing, and monitoring investments made by Incline Equity and led investments in multiple businesses in the manufacturing, franchising, and distribution industries. We hope you join us again next week for another rich conversation.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.